It begins. A song of Dode, beloved. Yahweh is my shepherd. He is the observant guide who tends to and protects me. I shall not be diminished. I shall never have any unfulfilled need, nor shall I be found wanting. In an abode that is befittingly beautiful and conducive to growing, to sprouting out and shooting forth, to flourishing, a place where the provisions are for the choicest, most nurturing and richest, delightful food to consume, which facilitate vigorous health, abundant prosperity, tremendous growth, total freedom, complete satisfaction, and a stalwart attitude. He enables me to stretch out and then recline appropriately sheltered after exerting myself. All above, the Almighty's water, a symbol for that which brings forth life and which cleanses, synonymous with the Spirit. Calm and composed, tranquil, after coming to rest with the focus of the space now being occupied, which was active and moving, extending myself, but now have returned satisfied and content. He leads me to the light. He guides me toward the goal of enlightenment and of being unburdened with great care. My soul, he restores and returns. He turns around and brings back home. He wants to guide me when I trust him with accurate, upright, and vindicating teaching throughout life on account of his personal and proper name. That's where we are thus far, Kirk. It's a powerful insight, isn't it? And we have Kirk live, but don't seem to be able to hear him. Maybe Scott,
can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, that's good. Well, I'll try to speak up a little bit.
Okay.
No, that's a beautiful, beautiful song. Beautiful song.
Yeah, it's a wonderful presentation of the result of choosing, the consequence, if you will, of choosing to accept the conditions that enable us to be part of the covenant family.
And once again, points out how good, how astute Richard was in pointing that out of that 7-7 of Shabua.
Yeah, is what was pointed out. I think it was actually Chuck that sent me this email. Yeah, that Chuck said that, you know, isn't there a correlation between the 22nd and 23rd Psalm? Because this was the beginning of the 23rd Psalm, and what he's talking about is being empowered, being drawn to the light, which is empowering, is enlightening. He's talking about being enriched with what Yahweh is providing through these experiences that he is sharing with Yahweh, by Yahweh guiding him. So this is all being enriched with Yahweh's teaching and empowered by his Spirit as we're drawn to the light. And that is the exact depiction of the benefits of Shabbat. When you look at what we gain on the fourth of the Moed Mikre, Shabuah, these are exactly the benefits: enriched, empowered, enlightened. And that's interesting because what Chuck pointed out in an email a couple of days ago was that the first three benefits of the covenant are fulfilled by the first three Moed Mikre, which are described in the previous psalm. So these really aren't separate psalms. One flows from the other. The previous one is an eyewitness account of exactly how Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim would be fulfilled. And Pesach makes us immortal. Matzah makes us perfect. And Bikurim adopts us into Yahweh's family. Those are the first three benefits of the covenant. The final two, being enriched and empowered, are being presented right here.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah, it's a beautiful affirmation of the purpose of those first four Moed Mikra, of the benefits of the covenant, why the first four were fulfilled, and why we're still awaiting the fulfillment of the last three.
Mm-hmm.
It's all explained, all laid down right here by probably the brightest man who ever lived.
Yeah. It always comes back to this, doesn't it? I mean, Yahweh is, he does it from 14,000 different directions, but it all comes back to exactly the same story, so you get it.
And yeah. Now, he's saying that all of this benefit, this which just is so amazing, this psalm began with Yahweh's name. And now we're at the conclusion of the third statement, and it says that he is doing all of this. He wants to guide us when we trust him with upright, accurate, vindicating teaching throughout life on account of, because of, his personal and proper name, his Shem. And so, how is it that a Christian can recite this psalm, mistranslated, of course, and not think, wait a minute, if this is all being done on account of his name, maybe I need to know what his name is? Maybe I need to value his name? What's the largest denomination of Christianity?
Catholicism.
Yeah, by a huge, huge margin. About half the Christians in the world are Roman Catholics. What did the Pope say about Yahweh's name? Made a papal decree.
Yeah, they outlawed it in any type of function that I'm aware of.
Yeah, it can't be spoken in any one of their churches or cathedrals.
Well,
that would be the opposite of this, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that really separates you. If you want to separate it, I'll do it.
And yeah, how many Christians do you hear saying in Yahweh's name, we pray?
I've never really heard anybody say that.
I've never heard one. Never heard one. When you talk with a Christian and they speak about their God, do they ever call their God Yahweh?
No. In fact, the few preachers that will bring it up, they will discount it as not important.
Yeah. And this began, the first word in this psalm was Yahweh's name, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Very
good. Did it say Jesus Christ?
Not at all.
Did it infer Jesus Christ?
Not even close.
If Dode wanted to write Jesus Christ, could he?
No.
There isn't even letters don't exist to create the sounds in Hebrew.
Nor Jehovah. Couldn't use that one either.
There is no oos sound in Hebrew. There is a Greek. There is no J in Hebrew. There isn't even a J in Greek.
No. Or Latin. At one time.
Wow. And so here's a psalm that is the single most beloved and most memorized psalm in Christianity. And it's an ode to Yahweh's name and talks about all the benefits associated of Yahweh's name, of Yahweh's will being directly associated with his name. And there's not one Christian in a million that knows it and uses it.
Now, that's really tragic. Just if you just sit there for a minute and think about that, that is tragic.
A complete disconnect between Christians logically and their faith.
Boy.
Yeah. You know, who is God? Is God Jesus Christ?
No.
No.
And the one they claim he was, he didn't even say that.
No.
Anything. He said the opposite.
Yeah. Yahweh said, and Yahweh is simply a diminished manifestation of Yahweh, saving us. He said, the Father is greater than I. Why are you looking to me? Why not consider the Father? And every question he answered by, what does it say in the Torah?
Yeah.
What does it say in the Torah? Go read the Torah. You know, that's Yahweh's communication to us. You know, it is pathetic that they not only have turned a man into a god, but they don't even know his name. If they knew his name, they wouldn't have done that. I mean, which is, it was required that they change his name, because if they actually referred to him as Yahusha,
then it would be too obvious that he came in his father's name and was representing Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. That's what he said.
And by the way, when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? And they all know he said that.
Oh, yeah.
Then, why is it, by the way, when he said that, my God, why have you forsaken me, that they think their God died? When the man that they want to claim as God said that there was no association between he and God anymore, and he said that before he died.
Mm-hmm.
So then how is it possible that God died for their sins?
You're using logic again, you know.
Oh, I mean, and faith is the antithesis of logic, right?
Mm-hmm. And you're questioning, too many questions.
So for faith to survive, reason has to be rejected.
Has to be, yeah, totally. Agree.
By the way, my God, why have you forsaken me? Which he spoke. What was he reciting something, or was he really asking a question? Or was he reciting something?
When
Yeshua said on the upright pole before his body died, and he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? When he said that, was he asking a question, or was he reciting a passage?
No, he knew what was happening. He was reciting a passage.
He's God, after all. At least he was up to that point. So he was not asking a question.
No.
Do you know where that line appears?
Not exactly. I know I've read it, but I can't remember.
It's the opening line to the 22nd Psalm.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Well, down.
So does that reinforce?
That's
something.
There's the connect right there.
Does it reinforce something that we just said, that what happened on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkudim is explained in the 22nd Psalm, and the benefits of Shavuah, the promise of the Shabbat, the fourth of the Moed Mikri, is explained in the 23rd?
Very good. Very good, yeah.
So was Yosha telling them, you want to know about this stuff? Turn to the 22nd stuff. Look what Dode wrote about what I'm doing here.
Wow.
Do you think there's a rational Christian out there? Or would they cease to be a Christian if they were to consider these things?
Probably the latter.
Yeah, if you're a Christian, call in and challenge us on this. Challenge God. See if it works for you. Be okay with a little detour, since there's this obvious connection, and Yosha pointed us to it when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? I told you that it was the opening line of the 22nd Psalm. Let me read it to you. My God, mighty one, singular, Eli. My God, Eli, singular. Why, Lama, have you completely and literally forsaken me? Azab. Have you totally abandoned and actually relinquished me? Have you genuinely and absolutely, unquestionably left me, separated from me, and departed from me? Damned and deserted me. Call, which means literal and actual, perfect, total and complete. And, by the way, it was written in the perfect here, and it was written down in the Christian New Testament as if he spoke Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever wrote it down, whoever heard it, said, you know, I'm hearing this, and I think it is in Aramaic. What is the closest language to the vocabulary and sound of the words where they're so close that if you can understand one, you'll understand the other, where the sounds are almost indistinguishable, the alphabet's almost indistinguishable. What language? And Hebrew. What language is Aramaic?
Hebrew
is that. Yeah, there's actually one book, in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, that is partially written in Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Daniel.
So
Daniel has about 20% of it that's in Aramaic, 80% in Hebrew. So somebody who was listening to him would have found it almost impossible to differentiate between the two and might have just assumed that he spoke in Aramaic because they were more familiar with Aramaic than they were with Hebrew. Because, you know, the Hebrews, the Israelites, weren't around Golgotha. That was an area that typically was surrounded by Romans. I mean, the last thing you wanted to be is a Israelite near the place where Romans crucified Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
But the Romans were there. The Romans would have heard it and said, it must be Aramaic. And so he was citing this passage. And he used the perfect, because I am quite certain, since he wrote the passage, that he inspired the passage, that he knew what the passage said.
Mm-hmm.
And so he used the perfect. The perfect, what does it mean? What's the difference between the perfect and the imperfect?
It's a done deal, one and done.
One and done. Does it, with the imperfect, it means that
ongoing.
This is ongoing, habitual, ongoing. This is the state that things will endure.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't use the imperfect. He said that he was separated from God, but if he wanted to say totally and completely for all time separated from God, he would use the imperfect. That was going to be an ongoing state. He used the perfect, which means right now at this moment, I'm separated. I'm abandoned. We no longer have any point in common. I'm no longer God. But he used it in the perfect, which said that, aha, there is the possibility that I could be reacquainted. Absolutely. It's powerful. And the fact that he spoke it in the call stem means, folks, this is literal. He meant it exactly as he said it. It was not a question. He was announcing something. My God, my God. And it's, ma is just an interrogative. It doesn't necessarily mean why. And maybe it shouldn't even be translated why here.
Mm-hmm.
Ma is an interrogative. It just means that what follows is being stated as a question, and it could be by what means.
Yeah, well, that's one way you'd ask a question mark, right?
Yeah, it could mean for how long.
Yeah.
It could be to what end. Now, if he takes Yosha's soul and he separates his spirit from Yosha's soul, Yosha, the body that's there and the soul that is there, is no longer God.
Mm-hmm.
He would not have known for how long. At that very moment, he would not have known how long.
Yeah, because he's a total disconnect at this point.
Yeah, total disconnect. But it means that God could not have died for your sins if you're a Christian. You have been lied to in that regard. And the fact that he was quoting the 22nd Psalm that comes before the 23rd, he is explaining to you what is going to happen and why it is happening. And Azam doesn't mean just, the totality of God, the Godhead, is no longer upon me. No, the totality of the Godhead.
Was never upon him.
If there is such thing, yeah, if there's such thing as a Godhead, and there isn't,
no.
Was never upon him because it would have incinerated the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, it's just saying there is no association of any kind. That body and that soul are no longer God. Welcome back to A Shattering Mist. So here is Yosha on the upright pole before his physical body dies, before his soul goes into Sheol. And he is saying to Yahweh, my God, my God. So Yosha had a God, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Oops. How can Yosha at that point be God if he's speaking to a God, his God?
No, can't. God is one.
Can't be. Yeah, my God, my God. By what means and for how long have you completely and literally separated yourself from me? Psalm 22. Then it goes on to say, I continually call out to my God throughout the day. But you do not answer. And by night, and there is no relief for me. You know what the word, the verb is for continually call out?
Kara.
Kara. What is Kara the basis of?
Mine's gone blank.
The Mikra.
Mikra, yeah. Called out assembly.
Yeah. All right. The invitation to be called out and meet with God.
Mm-hmm.
So now he is proclaiming here that, hey, I am on an ongoing basis right now, I am the Mikra. I'm the Mikra. These invitations to meet, the first of which he is right now, the Passover lamb, fulfilling Pesach, and in a moment,
it's going to be in
he's going to switch to the, his soul is going to be the yeast for unyeasted bread. I continually, Kara, my God, throughout the day. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the most tragic thing about this, and I know you have some new listeners, is that, you know, we were just talking about his name and Yahweh's name. Yahweh's name, of course, tells the story initially on how, you know, you see the whole story there in his name, not everything.
Yeah, the two people standing up are the two that he founded the covenant with. Right.
Down Barak,
paying attention to him, yeah. Engaged with him, standing on both sides of the empowering and securing addition of the wall. As a result of Yahweh reaching down to lift them up.
Right. Then you have Yahushua, who says, I came in his name, and there's his name right there in it. The only addition is the shin and the ain, the tooth and the eye. Whereas obviously he's paying the price. You know, he's the price for reconciliation.
Can I share something with you on Yahushua that I didn't think of until just this very moment?
Yes, sir.
There were actually three differences between Yahusha and Yahuwah. And all three are important. There's two letters that are added, and they're both revealing. But there's only one hey. Because he is now the one and only, who is standing up for us, pointing the way to God. He is the one and only who stood up for us, pointing the way to Yahweh. That's why there's one hey, there's not two.
That's pretty good.
So he is the hand of God. Yahweh is the very hand of God. That's why the yod is there. Who is standing up for us, providing the way on Pesach. Standing up for us so we could stand with him. Now you still have the wall because he is about the business of securing us, of empowering us, of enriching us, of enlightening us.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is the Shua. Shua is based on Yasha, the Hebrew word that means to save. And the SH, as you said, is the spoken word. So he is the spoken word of Yah. And the aim is the eye that gives you a visual picture of, a perspective from which to understand Yah and the word of Yah. So in that name, the letters of the name say that he is the spoken word of Yahweh, that he is a visual manifestation that can be seen and provides perspective on the word of Yahweh.
So Shamar.
Now, don't you lose all of that when you don't know what his name is?
Well, the point that I was kind of driving to is the most horrible thing in the world about changing the name is that you've lost it all, and that is so criminal in this context. If you really think about it,
yes,
a little bit, this is so criminal that there has to be a Sheol to put them in, because that's just that's worse than just killing somebody, you know, for me just to hang them. they need to be there and think about this eternally, what they've done. This is the biggest crime in history.
Yes. I continually, Kara, I mean, he's saying, I'm here.
totally.
In the midst of this. But he says, you know, far removed, remote in distance, separated in time and space, alienated, and no longer in a close association from rahak, meaning to be removed and distant from my salvation. You know what salvation is in Hebrew?
Shalom.
No, that's reconciliation. This is salvation. This is Yahu'a. Yahshua.
Yahshua.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be spelled Yod, Shen, Wa, and then the Ain, followed by the He. Yahshua. What does Yahshua sound like to you? Is there a name that sounds like
Yahosha?
There you go.
Yeah. And his name
is in the statement that he uttered for all to hear. Mm-hmm. If you went to the psalm that he was reciting, you would see his name. Far away, distanced, separated in space, alienated and no longer in any kind of an association, removed and distant, far away, is Yahusha. In other words, he is no longer Yahweh.
No.
He says, are the words debar of my distress. He's the spoken word of Yahweh, and at that point, he is, he's not, Yahweh has no intent of saving that body, that sacrificial lamb. No intent of sparing that soul, the experience of Sheol.
Not the experience, no. Yes.
And he named the individual Yahshua. And yet, despicable, perverted, misguided, ignorant, and irrational Christians change that name to Jesus, which doesn't mean squat. Wow. And they say, hey, it doesn't matter. If it doesn't matter, then why are the insights in that name and the letters that comprise the name so profound?
Why did he tell you don't change the word?
Of Yahweh, standing up for us, to secure us, to enrich us, through his spoken word via the visual manifestation of his testimony. That's what the name means, and they threw it all away, discarded it, spit on it. In fact, if you tell them what the name is, they mock you. Hey, he knows what his name is. He knows who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
You obviously don't. You obviously don't know who you're talking to when you corrupt his name. Because if you knew, you would know that Yahusha is nothing more than the visual manifestation of Yahweh, the living embodiment of Yahweh's word, that Yahweh in the process of saving us.
You can't show any respect for Yahweh, then why the heck would he want you?
Correct. I mean, he's doing all of this for the sake of his name. Why he was doing it all. Don't recognize it was all based upon his name. And there isn't a Christian, one in a million, that knows his name. There's not one Christian in a million that ties, my God, why have you separated yourself from me? The declaration that they find in the midst of their Christian New Testament with the very psalm that he was quoting that explains exactly what occurred.
Now, this is there to be found, and certainly theologians and certain preachers have found it. So are they just possessed, or they just don't believe it, so they don't care? I can't wrap my brain around that.
Right. How it could be this obvious and not one Christian in a million has it figured out, including those who do the preaching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even this, you know, when he acknowledges that he is Kara, he's the fulfillment. And he even told us in the Sermon on the Mount, you know, I came to fulfill. He's announcing here, I am Kara. On the basis of the Mikra, That's when he told Shimon Kefesh, you know, that famous line that Christians, I can't even say inaccurately translates. It's not even a translation. You know, upon this rock I'll build my church.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's no word that's even remote to going to church. It is, I will bana my mikra is what he said. And mikra and ecclesia are conveyed the same thing, but rather than acknowledging that he was saying in Hebrew, I will bana my mikra, and they would have known that's why he used kara here, why he spoke it. They changed it to a pagan concept of a church.
Yeah.
But he is declaring here what he declared in the Sermon on the Mount. I came to fulfill the Mikra. My God, throughout the day, I call out, but you do not answer. You know, the answer here is from Ana. That's the word that religious buffoons would tell you means to afflict.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't translate it afflict here. You know, the day of affliction on Yom Kippurim.
Yom Kippurim.
Where you have to afflict your soul because it's the same verb, ana. They don't want to translate it afflict here because he was being afflicted. He was in the process of being afflicted. It's a beautiful way of explaining both sides of ana. That we should realize that ana means to answer. And it means to provide a testimony and a declaration. And that when we do that, then we're not going to be afflicted. So here we realize that answer is answer. Ana means to answer. And therefore, when Yahweh, four times in the Moed Mikra, in the invitations to be called out and meet with him, encourages us to ana. To answer his invitation. That's what he means. He doesn't want us to afflict ourselves. He wants us to answer his invitation and to approach the feminine manifestation of his light.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's four Moed Mikra where that terminology exists, and it's based upon Ana. And so here what I think we're seeing is the flip side of Ana. It means here to answer, which is exactly how I've translated it in the invitation, because obviously you answer an invitation.
Sure.
But here Yahusha is being afflicted so that all we have to do is answer the invitation.
Right. And because Christians think everything was completed at that point, when it comes, the only people that will be there by Yom Kippurim to answer and later, when that's fulfilled, because they already think everything is fulfilled and nothing else mm-hmm. is necessary, so they don't have to participate in nothing that he said. And that's why there's going to be nothing but the Yisraelites and Yehudi that will answer the call then.
Well, that's
so
right.
That's the only people who are going to get renewed.
So speaking of ongoing nature,
mm-hmm.
what conjugation do you think was used on the verb kara and on the verb ana, answer?
Well, imperfect is ongoing, so it
has yeah.
Imperfect, yeah.
Both of them were written in the imperfect. That means that the value of what is occurring here is ongoing. That means that it was not completed once and for all. He's going to continue to be the symbol of the Mikra.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to continue to fulfill them. Because, by the way, there are three more to be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
It's ongoing.
And we're going to celebrate him forever.
Yeah.
And we're
going to be answering
uh-huh.
answering his invitation forever.
Yeah. And why wouldn't you party some more?
And he was Torah observant, right? He was Torah observant. He's on an ongoing basis. Both were in the imperfect. So you do not answer throughout the day. And by night, there is no relief. By night, there is no sound. Total silence. There is no rest or repose for him. So during the day, what happened during the day of Pesach?
Pesach is when he was crucified.
All right. He's the Passover lamb where his body gives way. He separates himself from God. He is no longer God.
And his
physical body dies on Pesach. So during the day, there is no reply. There's no response from God. He lets him.
Mm-hmm.
He lets the body die.
All right.
And by the way, that death is ongoing. That death was written in the imperfect, which means that unlike everything else we've considered, like the separation. The separation was in the perfect, which means that it at a different time, then it could be restored. But in this particular situation, it's written in the imperfect, which means that that there is going to be no answer ever for his body. His body is goner forever. It's a totally separated for God with no answer, no response, nothing.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Forever.
Point, yeah.
Forever.
Stop deifying this body. I mean, come on.
And during the night, there is total silence. No rest.
Yes.
No repose. Because where was his soul going?
Sheol.
Sheol, that night.
Best we can understand is some kind of black hole. That's,
yeah. And so he's described Sheol here as night.
Mm-hmm.
As darkness.
A light in a black hole.
Right. And radio silence from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And where when you're with Yahweh, the psalm tells us there is rest and reflection. He says, you know, this place where I'm going, there ain't no rest. There ain't no rest. There's no communication from Yahweh, no response from Yahweh, no engagement from Yahweh, and it's total darkness. He's described Sheol.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to wonder. He's told us what it is. Wow. And then, of course, you have the name Yahusha, and you've explained it. The hand of God is the individual who stood up for us, pointing the way to Yahweh, who was on the upright pillar. That tent peg, you know, it's really described and presented very similar to the device upon which he hung.
Yeah.
The upright pillar. And it's the upright, he is the upright pillar of the tabernacle. That's what he's showing. The very word of Yahweh. The visual manifestation of Yahweh. Yod, He, Wah, Shin, Ain. Well, if there was ever a time, Kirk, where your artistic insights into the name speak louder than words, this is the time.